Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the OM Podcast, Outwear's podcast all about the mobile industry. I am lead Android developer, Keith Smythe. This be lead visual designer, Peter Talbot. Warm greetings to you, sir.
What is going on?
Hi.
I feel like I just stepped on the set of a play school.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that was... what's happening? I'm good. I'm good.
I don't put my intro in the show notes. Yeah, okay. Just for Pete's reaction. Okay. That's literally it. So today is all about business. Should I business with you? How much business do I need? Whose business is this business? And what does that business mean to me? And to help us decipher what it is that I've just said, we've spliced together a user experience designer and a business analyst, and we have named him Sriman Kalyan. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Yeah. And you got my last name right.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. I've been practicing. I think I got it wrong about 9 times out of 10 before the show.
But this time, yep, it's perfect. Yeah.
Perfect. That's it. That's a wrap. We're done. Yeah. It's very nice to have you. Welcome to your first show as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is the first show and like pretty excited. Yeah.
Yeah. First show of many, I'm sure.
Mm. Well, hang on a sec. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. This is your interview. Yeah. So rounding out our table of executives, we have Captain Business himself, Michael Dalich. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back. I was kind of worried from the last show that I might have bored all our listeners away and the repeat call.
But we lost the document that said these people are blacklisted. So we're not sure if you were on that document or...
Just assume that I wasn't.
Assume that you cleared the first interview. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the second round.
I need a contract to see otherwise.
We were desperate.
Yeah, we've lost Kent. We're desperate. So I'm going to run this a bit like a business meeting, so everyone feels nice and at home and everything. So the first item on our agenda today is it's actually about meetings. I have a lot of meetings, and I tend to leave my laptop in places around the office, and this results in me not knowing where my computer is half the time, which is very hard to do work. So is there some kind of, this is a question for everybody, crowdsourced cheap solution out there that can help me in my problem? No one's going to jump in on that, are they?
Why, yes, Keith. Funnily enough, you
But if I posted
question.
Like
Just
it was one of those ads.
Yeah. I think crowdsourcing the findability of items is something that's pretty new.
Have you tried Yarn?
Yarn? Is that the thing that's in the Yarn. Melbourne tourism ad, that big... ball of yarn?
Yeah, it was. That's going back a few years. But if you just wrap it around your laptop and when you walk around, you weave a little web.
And I can also discover Melbourne at the same time. Yeah. It's amazing.
Discover Melbourne's unique laneways.
Well, I was trying to hint to something that we all planned beforehand. But so you guys have been talking about this thing called the Tile app. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Tile. Piece of
or just Tile.
Tile.
Tile. Okay. The website is called Tile. The Tile app. So
they've got a great... TVC as well. Get it right from the start. It's Tile Mart.
Yes, I paved my kitchen with this. Yep. So, what's Tile? Who knows more about it than I do?
I think Dalek is all over it.
Okay. So, I think Tile itself has been around for close to 2 years now, I think.
It's nice and new.
I was pretty surprised, though, when I went on the website just recently that they were still doing pre-orders. So I don't know if they initially did a first release and it sort of flopped and now they're doing a second release or if it's just been 2 years in the making since they got their initial funding. But
sounds like a Kickstarter money laundering scam.
Sounds like they just put it in a savings account for 2 years and got some interest and now they're going, oh, we have to do something with this money.
Yeah, now they're going to make a potato salad and everyone's going to be really happy. Look at that. I'm on the ball.
But essentially, Tiles are using Bluetooth LE in conjunction with a mobile phone app to, I guess, remember the last known location of a device. So,
of the tile.
Of the tile itself. Yeah. That's associated with a...
I assume, yeah, it's attached to the device somehow. So it's this small white thing, isn't it, that you stick on your phone, I assume? And then when you leave your laptop in places?
You can essentially put it wherever you want. So I don't know if you want to go through the mechanics of an iBeacon and Bluetooth LE, I guess it's more so what they use in an iBeacon. I guess one and the two are the same. But iBeacons themselves, what they do is they transmit very small packets of data, I think sort of 2 to 39 bits of data. Within a range of, I guess I've seen some people say up to 90 meters, but I think the consensus is about 50 meters. Mm-hmm. with some basic information. So you can associate an iBeacon ID to that packet of data. You can associate battery strength.
Is Tile the same as an iBeacon, essentially, or is it different?
To be honest, I'm not too sure. I think iBeacons potentially is the marketing term that Apple have put over their proprietary.
It's got an I in front of it, so it probably is.
So does the Tile piece of hardware, from my understanding, it works much like that scene in Cliffhanger when Bandy, what's Lord Farquaad, the actor
out of Lord Farquaad.
The Shrek movie? Sorry.
Oh,
yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that guy. Third Rock from the Sun guy. Let's call him Third Rock from the Sun guy.
Hang on.
Yeah, John Lithgow.
John Lithgow. When John Lithgow's character is trying to track the money, and he has an electronic device, and there's beacons on the money, and sure enough, he finds them. So what we're offering now, what they're offering now.
So you put a Tile on your money.
Tiles, let's call them Lithgow boxes. And you can put them on whatever device you want, and then your phone acts like the little computer in Cliffhanger and finds.
Yeah, essentially. So beacons themselves, although they're pretty cool, they themselves are pretty stupid in that all they do is they, hey, here's my signal within this range. They don't do too much else. They're sort of the marketing term that Bluetooth has put around them is Bluetooth smart. So, you know, they emit the signal, but they require something else to interact within that signal to act as a GPS location or something that's connected to a cellular or Wi-Fi network, which in this case is typically a smartphone, which would be Bluetooth smart ready. So when the two are used in conjunction, your phone can come into contact with that 50 to 90 meter range that the Tile is emitting, mm-hmm. and say, I've just stepped into range of this thing. It therefore mm-hmm. must be close to me. This is the signal strength, so it therefore must be this distance away from me. So you can essentially start to say, I'm within the range of this beacon, therefore is somewhere close by.
So I've bought a set of Tiles. Mm. I've put one in my wallet and I've just left my wallet at home and driven to work, which is more than 90 meters away. Mm. How do I know where my wallet is?
Is that where crowdsourcing comes into picture?
This is where the crowdsourcing.
Crowdsourcing? Comes
into play. Yeah. So Tile is working on the presumption that the whole application of this is going to take off and that hundreds of thousands of people are going to download this thing and that at some point in time, someone with the app will come within 50 to 90 meters range of your item.
Oh, I see. So the apps are actually saying, I've seen this Tile in this location, and they're communicating that to some kind of Tile Overmind server.
You would have to announce that your wallet has been lost.
Correct.
It's not like if you just had it, people know where your wallet is.
I see.
Yeah.
And is it even possible for us to define who among the audience?
Yes.
Like restricted access kind of a thing. Like I don't want everybody to know that this is where my lost wallet is.
I don't think they know. I think the security issue is that that you might be able to get that data out somehow.
Yeah, that's the first thing I think of when I worry about it is if other things are picking up my Tiles, they're going to know where all my secret treasures are.
Well, essentially all your Tile might be doing is emitting an ID. So the app itself might pass an ID. But it might not know exactly what that ID is.
So they'll know if they're particularly clever and tricky. They'll know that there's a Tile somewhere near them, but they won't know what that Tile is stuck to.
Yeah, but it's the same way you can be standing outside someone's apartment and you can know there's a couch and a TV and a computer in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not going to prevent anyone from breaking down the door and taking it.
So, yeah, just like taking this Tile discussion forward, I think there are a few other like players as well in this scope. I mean, something like Wallet Tracker. And one of the like drawbacks of Tile, I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it doesn't have Android support.
Yes.
Am I right?
I did research that. Yeah. And then I researched numbers to rebut Tile.
So I don't think they have a Android app at the moment, but I'm pretty sure all new Android devices and from OS 4.0 onwards, they do is able to interact with Bluetooth Low LE. So
Bluetooth LE has been there since 4.3, which is KitKat.
So I was 0.3 off. but
hang
essentially,
4.3 is not even
looking.
4.3 is Jelly Bean.
I think looking into the future, we can see them creating an Android version of the app. I think the issue with Android thus far and Bluetooth LE is looking for it in the background. I think it's something that iOS started supporting from what would it have been? 7.1, I think.
If you get it wrong, people will send in emails.
Between 7 and 8, they started supporting actually looking for beacons in the background once apps actually not.
Well, I have a 1-year-old phone in my pocket, and it is currently connected by Bluetooth LE to, actually, it's not my watch, but it's Kieran's watch, a Android smartwatch. So I can attest that it works. Tile, get your act together. I've had my rant. I'm good now.
Has anybody pre-ordered a Tile?
I've put in my order in this evening, so I should be getting it by next week. So maybe we can do an analysis of how.
What are you going to be sticking that bad boy to?
My keys, which I perpetually lose.
That's a good one. I think that's the killer feature, right?
The cool thing about iBeacons, I mean, you can get them for pretty cheap nowadays. The ones that Tile have, I guess, developed, they also allow you to push data to, so they can read data. So you can actually make them play a little jingle or something. So if you are in the house and you know the keys are there somewhere, you can at least have them, you know, in the same way that you'd get someone to call your phone when you can't find your phone.
Yeah.
So that's really neat.
Is a cool application. It's not something you can get off the shelf with most iBeacons now.
Keith, what would you put yours on?
My Tile? Yeah. We just got a puppy at home, so it's a border collie, and it's faster than me already. So, yeah, that one. I would put my Tile on my puppy. just around the collar. Yeah. Except that it won't work on my phone, so I'll put a Tile on my puppy, and I'll have to use, like, Michael's phone to find it.
Have you ever lost your puppy?
Not yet. Oh, yeah, we've only had him for a week, so...
Right.
Do you know, like, this physical Tile, I mean, as such, how thin or small it's going to be?
It's the thickness of 3 credit cards.
Yeah, okay. So it's pretty small.
That's very specific.
Yeah. Well, in the demo video, which is...
Oh, they mentioned...
Pretty slick. They show an extra credit card.
Slick video.
It was interesting. I was having a conversation with someone just early in the week, and they were sort of saying that they had just assumed by now that technology would have advanced where that you could have some sort of little microchip that runs without battery and sits somewhere and it can track someone via GPS. But I think Bluetooth LE in conjunction with a phone is pretty much as far as we've gotten thus far.
Well, I got my Helios handlebars the other day, which turn your bike into a smart bike. They're fancy handlebars.
Yeah.
And inside them, they have... Bluetooth and a SIM card.
A SIM card, yeah.
And, yeah, so if your bike gets stolen, you can text your bike and your bike will go, hey, I'm here. And it's got GPS as well.
Oh,
so
nice.
It'll send you
trendy
the coordinates.
Cycle handbar.
But I haven't got it working yet, so we'll save that for another podcast.
It's called tech support. Yeah. My bike doesn't work.
My bike doesn't even text me.
So, yeah, it sounds really neat. I'm not going to get it until someone in the Android community ports it over to Android for us.
I'm sure. I mean, how many of these things are there on Kickstarter that can't just be...
There's got to be a lot, yeah.
Would it be something that you could see, say, like Apple or Google releasing their own ones, or do you think it'll always be a third party?
Google have a lot of things for finding your device, and Apple have the same kind of thing, but not for finding other things like the wallet, etc.
Maybe to be part of the home automation
thing. But what Google already has got is like the finding the parking location, like in Google Now. Like it detects like when you get outside your parked vehicle, like once it stops moving.
Yeah, geofences and, you.
Yeah.
There you go.
And sort of you get a location card in Google Now, which you can toggle off. But what it gives you is the last location where you got off from a moving vehicle. It could be a bus, train, any public transport, or it could be any vehicle. So yeah, they might like look at incorporating
that's pretty
these
cool
things.
Yeah.
I just fear though that we're just taking that next step to being just so reliant on technology. So when our phone dies,
I'm already there.
We'll just be like, where are our keys? Where's my bike? Where's my wallet? That's where did I park my car? Yeah, what has happened?
When I got this smartwatch from Kieran in the office, who was a legend and lent me this so I could play with it, one of the first apps I put on it was an app that buzzes my wrist as soon as it gets too far away from my phone. Mm-hmm. So I know if I've left my phone somewhere.
That sounds awful.
I need the same thing. It's great. It's so good.
Just like too much reliance on technology. But yeah, it's like
Google shocking you if you like walk
pretty
away
much
from
is,
your phone.
Isn't it?
It's like, hi, Kate.
It should just be called cattle prod. Anyway, I'd like to put a cap on that, and we'll shelve it for the next time.
Moving forward,
next item on the agenda is we're going to talk business now. So someone calls us. They have an idea for an app. It's the best idea in the world. How do we turn their idea into a product and bonus points for creativity? Shreeman.
Yep. Look, I mean, taking an app idea onto a product is just like, you know, like any app development process or product development process, which is like, you know, like requirement scoping, like coming up with wireframes, visual designs, whatever, onto the product development testing. But it sounds a bit overwhelming, like, you know, like to address all this at once. And that's why we have something called the product inception workshop, which is like the first phase of the whole product development approach.
So they'll come to you with the idea, and the first thing you would suggest would be, okay, this sounds like a decent idea. Let's do this workshop thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So this workshop is more like a collaborative process where the aim is like to come up with a list of features or MVP.
Pain is so noisy.
Product, as we would like to call it. Yeah.
So you get a list of features?
I mean, it depends. I mean, it's kind of a flexible process that we have for the workshop. But in general, yeah, it's like collaborating with the product team and the product owners from the client side, trying to understand the overall picture on the background, trying to like facilitate this workshop and come up with possibly the feature list for the product, mm-hmm. and if possible, also the minimum viable product.
Okay.
Which sort of like sets the stage for the whole development process and the scoping, which happens after that.
So you said a business word. I'm going to make you define it. What's a minimum viable product?
Right. A minimum viable product is kind of a refined product backlog, and I'm sure you want to ask what a product backlog is.
I've already written it down.
That's right.
We can come back to it if you want.
So yeah, a product backlog is nothing but, you know, like a list of all possible features a product can have or the product team wants, like say in future. Mm-hmm. Now this does not take into account the other, you know, like the parameters like whether it is feasible to do it in the given time frame, cost, budget, and things
like
that.
Just almost like a wish list.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
order of we want this and the most and at the top, I'm using my hands on a podcast, and we want this the least at the bottom.
That's so right.
If we look at AFL, for example, an MVP might be, okay, we need an app that opens and has the scores mm. for that week.
Yep.
Exactly.
And then the later features will be added so you can see all the scores for the year and then later live video and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And I think we took the AFL app a few steps further as well.
Well, yeah.
I think it's also important to sort of just note, I think when you put the word minimum in the title, it also gives an immediate negative connotation where it's something of inferior quality or it's a product that's just been quickly and, you know, to put out to the market.
The
speed is one of the factors, but it's not trying to do something of a lesser quality. It's trying to focus on a specific set of features which you think will meet the needs of potentially your largest user base.
Yeah, it's like what's the least amount of things this product has to do
to
in order for you to prove that.
Yeah. I think you're right, though. There's a branding issue with minimum.
That's right.
We yeah. should call it minimal.
Minimal, so wow. minimal viable. Yeah.
That's
really hard to say.
A minimal viable product.
Very good.
I think the organizations like the Facebooks and LinkedIns, when they released their apps, did a really good jobs of it. I mean, I know when it first came out on the iPhone, you know, you couldn't manage pages, you know, fan pages and things like that. The primary
couldn't
focus
copy and paste,
was, you know, looking at photos, making some posts, commenting on to some friends. You know, I don't even think chat was incorporated in at that stage.
So it can do one thing and it can do it well.
That's
so
right.
Don't try and do everything kind of okay.
Yeah. And I think what Shrubin was talking about in this inception workshop, a large part of defining the product backlog is defining what features get incorporated into that MVP and defining, well, what are we going to choose to be our priority? I mean, I think Shrubin with his UX hat would say usability and what the user wants is always number one, right?
That's right.
but unfortunately, in the real world, often businesses have business cases that they also need to appease. So
what is the business analyst part of Shrubin say?
So it's like a balance, I mean, between the user experience and the business analysis.
Shrubin is flipping a coin now, like a Batman villain.
Where's Harvey Dent? Right.
Yeah. So if you talk to a business and you say, okay, well, which one of these features, you know, you've come to us, you want this app, you haven't necessarily got a budget to support the development of it yet, which one of these 20 features need to be in there for you to go and sell it back to the business to be able to afford to build it? And then maybe let's choose four of those and then possibly choose five of the ones that the users want, you know? So I think Shrubin has a difficult job that I don't envy.
I have to see Shrubin talking in two separate voices like Smeagol, just fighting himself over it. No, but the users want this, precious. it took a lot of self-control to balance
that I was talking about. For example, from the business side of it, they might have like obligations and, you know, like sponsors and their vision of what the product should do. Say, for example, AFL is a good example. Like next season is like upcoming next year in a particular month. This is the feature I want to like make it available to all the users. Mm-hmm. But from a user's perspective, I mean, as a UX analyst as well, I think from the user's perspective, like trying to be the voice of the users, what they will want, trying to like convince the client what the users might not be happy with, mm-hmm. and trying to find the best possible way to deliver this particular feature. End of the day, like we will still go ahead and, you know, like try to find some balance, compromise on, you know, like the client's expectations or the user experience to a level, but it should be an optimal balance. So that's the perfect world.
Yeah, not too far one way, not too far the other way. Okay, so we're in the innovation, you know, inception meeting.
Inception?
I'm using too many business buzzwords today. Yeah. So we're in the inception meeting and we're touching base.
please stop touching me there.
We're touching base, it's okay. So you decide what the minimum viable product is, and that's based on a balance and schizophrenia and et cetera. So, I mean, what's kind of the benefit of all this? Like at the end of it, what do you end up with this sort of backlog that's a minimum viable product? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Maybe like even before like talking about the benefits, I should be giving an overview of what happens during the workshop, because one of the prerequisites or best practices of this workshop is like all the key decision makers and stakeholders are expected to be available, and which translates to the benefit, which is like the process is more efficient because all the key decision makers are available in the same workshop, and the decision making is efficient as to like whether this feature is needed for this particular release or not, or how best can we like implement this particular feature and things like that. So this workshop itself like necessitates like all these stakeholders to be available.
I think it's important as well, because often with app development projects, when they're worked on an enterprise level, you're not just going to come in with a large business, for example, a bank that just focuses on retail banking, just focuses on business banking, just focuses on superannuation. You may, but more often than not, you have, you know, a large organization with various silos, with various general managers who are all trying to meet their own targets and budgets and what have you, and their own interests. So by putting them all in a room and getting them to work it out there and then, and being, I guess, the masters of their own destiny in defining their own product, with support of Shruman, that they can't come back in 3 months' time and say, well, that's not what we wanted. We can say, well, that's exactly what you wanted. You know, you told us there and then. It was agreed upon by all seven of you rather than defined by us and thrown upon you.
It's more like we facilitating the whole workshop and trying to also understand the context of this whole product, I would say. I mean, trying to understand what the business need of this whole project or the product is and what the vision is. And what it helps is, for example, how these parameters are going to like impact the project timelines or the cost or even the feature decisions. So, yeah, so it's more like sitting together with the product team, product owners, trying to understand from them what they want, why they want, and stuff like that. And from then on, it's more like a whiteboard session where like we expect all the stakeholders or the participants to, you know, come up with silent brainstorming, as we call it, meaning come up with action words, like thinking from the users, what do you expect the users to be doing in this app? Like, for example, if it is an e-commerce app, log into the app or add a product to the, I don't know, shopping cart. Like, you know, like do a payment or add a shipping address. So each of these like carts become like features, and we sort of like try to arrange it into epics and also try to like apply, you know, like this should go into it or this must go into it, this need not go into it, sort of like into buckets. So this, like when I say we come up with the minimum viable product, it's not like a straightforward thing. Okay, let's sit together and finish it off. It's like it could be a day-long process or even multiple sessions. So end of it, the end product of this particular session is a feature list.
Oh, cool. Well, you mentioned you try and organize the features into epics.
Yeah.
What's an epic?
Ah, there you go again. Epics are nothing but the overall high-level features, I would say. For example, in the example that I used, the shopping cart one. Purchasing an item could be an epic, and that epic can have multiple features like sitting under it. So, yeah, when you're deciding as to like how to plan the roadmap for, say, the next 6 months or 1 year for the client from the strategic perspective, so it's important for them as to like, okay, this is the overall like subset of feature in the whole product that I want in my next release. So then we pick up that epic and try to like drill down and define all the sub features, which like in agile terminology,
if the epic
the
is cars. A shopping cart,
yeah,
adding something to the cart would be a feature,
yeah,
saving the cart for later, sending it to a friend.
Would you agree, Shruman, that usually when we get to these inception workshops or we get to that phase, the epics are usually already defined, but the actual minor granular details?
Not always. The reason is, like, it's not always that we get to work with enterprises or, you know, like organizations who have clearly defined requirements, I would say. Like, say, for example, you started saying, like, you have an app idea. And if it is a startup company that we are talking to, they might be like, this is what we are building, and we want an app to support it. And they might not be knowing, like, what epics or the features they want in the app.
They just know they want an app.
Yeah, they just know that they want an app, and they don't know, like, how to go about it, how to go about ideating and sitting and trying to figure out what the users want, how to segregate them into epics and stuff like that. So for those kind of clients, Michael, it's more like first stage would be like ideation, wherein like we sort of brainstorm and figure out the best set of features and epics, and from then on try to like conduct this workshop. So it's a bit flexible process, I would say.
Yeah, it's interesting, Keith, how you said you have someone with the idea, and you mentioned why do we want this app. And I think it comes back to, again, like I said, it's either a business coming to us with a business need that they believe an app can fix, or that they have something that they think they could take out to a consumer to market and monetize. So I think it's either one of those two.
Yeah.
And I think there's a big viability part of Shruman's job as well to say, yeah, this can genuinely fix your business, and it can do so in a manner that's going to be financially sustainable.
That's right.
Or this is going to genuinely create some economic, you know, value to allow it to be a product in its own right.
So that's right. Because that is one more thing that we will be covering in the workshop, which is like trying to define the personas, like the end user personas and also the stakeholder personas. Now, these stakeholders are more like who are the actual beneficiaries of this app from the business point of view. Like, how are they going to like monetize this particular app, or how are they going to make money out of it? So what Michael is trying to say is, like, we will also be like trying to look at possible risks and, you know, like how to mitigate them at a high level, not obviously at a detail level, and also see whether their model for the whole app business model is like something that is viable.
So they have to have some kind of end goal.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So, I mean, do target audiences come into play at all as well in this? Like, would you design features and so on, certain epics and everything differently based on the audience?
Do you mean the end users of the app?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, as I mentioned, like, we will also be defining the user personas. I mean, this is more required from defining the use cases, I would say. For example, like in the session, like it's a whiteboard session, as I mentioned. So what we do is first we create a vision box where all the vision, business need, and those like high-level corporate stuff like goes into it. And then we try to focus on the users, the end users, who actually these end users are, and few things like how tech-savvy they are going to be, or, you know, are we like catering to specific demographic of these like end users, like the age group or whatever. Because what this like helps us is in defining not just the layout of the app and the user experience, but also the features and how easy, for instance, a feature discoverability should be. Or if it is a highly tech-savvy audience that we are catering to, then we can look at like cool animations or transitions or whatever. So yeah, we will have a clear understanding of the end users as well as part of this workshop, and that is pretty much important as well.
Shruman, when you're thinking back to the MVP, when you're thinking of an MVP, typically how many user personas do you think you should look at, or is it something like 80% of the user base, or, you know, a maximum of 3 personas if they, you know, make up the majority? Is there, I'm not sure there's a hard and fast rule, but is it something that you would feel comfortable with?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the intention here should be to identify all the personas or all the end users that the app is going to cater to. But if it is an app, for example, which is going to cater to any user of any age group and any demographic, then obviously we can follow the 80-20 principle, like try to cater to the 80% of the population if you're not able to like cater to the 100% of it.
Yep.
But yeah. But the problem is, like, we should just be aware of the fact the more the common patterns that we address in this particular initial workshop, it's good, because this sort of sets the stage for the wireframing and the design process.
Interesting.
Awesome. Cool. So the Inception workshop sounds like it's done.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their product backlog.
Yeah.
What happens next? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, this Inception workshop is more like just the starting point, and we haven't even actually started the scoping of the project. So what happens now is we have a product backlog, and sometimes we will have an MVP. sometimes we might not be able to prioritize it. So in that case, it's just like one full feature list. So from here on is the actual scoping of the requirements analysis or requirements gathering. And we start building concepts in the wireframes and the visual designs. And it's an iterative process wherein like we come up with the concepts, try to user test these concepts so that, you know, like we know that we are on the right track in terms of the user experience. And over a period of time, we have this finalized set of wireframes, which you developers like start, you know, like being aware of, because you use these wireframes and visual designs for estimation and the actual development process. But in terms of the product development, yeah, so we go on, do concept wireframes, translate them into visual designs, and then comes in, you know, like estimation, the actual software development process.
I'm going to continue my tirade of making you define things. And so a wireframe is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I just use them. I don't actually know exactly how to define them. I would define it as it's like the skeleton of a building. It's not all the coverings and everything. It's how it works underneath. So you can see your screen. You can see the basic elements of your screen and basically where they sit. And if it says, if you click this button, it goes to this screen.
That's right. This text
is here. This text is there.
That's right. I mean, yeah. You can look at it as a skeleton for the whole app that you're building, like trying to define all possible sections, the navigation pattern, mm-hmm. and also few important aspects like information architecture. For example, like what content goes where in this particular screen or the view, and how the various levels of hierarchy of the content is going to be like made available in the app. And yeah, it is skeleton, but it is pretty much important because it's from there, like the visual design or the developers or the testers, like, refer to, mm-hmm. right? So, and also we have like platform conventions and standards. So if you're designing for iOS or Android specifically, so we take into account all these conventions and standards and make sure the app like is intuitive.
Works
to the users.
The way the user expects it to.
Exactly. Like, yeah. So intuitiveness and, you know, ease of use.
So yeah. You mentioned visual design.
Yeah.
So that's where Peter comes in.
He is the master of visual design.
Bingo.
Bingo. You're back. Tag. So what happens? What do you get when you start a visual design in this whole product development approach?
There's quite a bit of crossover. So ideally, we'd be involved in that initial kickoff,
mm-hmm.
And work collaboratively with the UX designer from that stage. But we usually work off. So we will get the wireframes and we'll interpret that into the finished artwork and look and feel and think about things like motion and transitions and basically how it's going to look and feel to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like getting a blueprint and then we basically
paint it, I suppose.
Build and decorate the house. It's a bad analogy.
Yeah. Yeah. We put couches in the living room.
Yeah. Yeah. Jamie Drury of Apple.
We're drapes specialists.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so we're there to make sure like brands are represented correctly and that you know, it feels intuitive to the user and there's nothing too jarring and to also add another layer to help guide and direct the user, so by using color and hierarchy and design.
Drop shadows,
yeah. Yep. With material design, that's a big thing. Yeah, and just to make sure that people know things are tappable and
I think,
interactive and stuff
I think
like that.
Part of the job as well, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, is sometimes if you're designing stuff for large organizations and they've got pretty defined visual assets and stuff, is having a bit of continuity between the brand and its different digital platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's always a strong priority for a lot of big companies. And the tricky thing with mobile design is because it's such a new idea, you'll often get style guides and stuff that is a design for print.
Mm.
So you'd be like, okay, well, that's great if I was designing an annual report, but this doesn't really apply to me. So
well, you'll get a lot of the time desktop software, and
you have to, you know, like because the original branding agency or whatever, whether it's done internally or externally, they've never considered, you know, what a logo might have to look like if it's only 40 pixels.
So is it hard to communicate that? It's like, here's your logo on a really nice phone. It's all high def and everything.
Mm.
Here's your logo on a tiny tiny little phone.
Yeah, we don't have to. It's getting easier because screens are getting bigger and resolution's getting higher.
There's like just that, less tiny phones.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Yeah. It was harder back in the day.
But it introduces another problem where users are complaining, oh, my data's being chewed up. It's like, well, yeah, you have a screen that's 1080p and you've been downloading 1080p images all day on it.
True.
They're not small.
But yeah, we often find, you know, clients are always wanting to inject their logo everywhere and
their ads.
I think we've spoken about branding on the podcast before, but
yes, spoke. Yeah.
It's what we're about is finding clever ways to, you know, inject the brand's personality into the app, rather than just sort of like slapping it up there like a sticker.
Yeah, having some sort of template.
Getting like, you know, building good experiences for the user so they can sort of play with the brand, and rather than having, you know, ads and logos sort of forced upon them.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. So you've done scoping, and that's, I think we've covered everything in the scoping phase, have we? I don't. There's a developer will come in and also help.
I think we've undersold the situation. It's a pretty. It's a pretty.
Well, that's that.
Yeah.
And that's it. Done.
Yeah, it's more like just the behind the scenes activity that happens, like, you know, which the developers might not be like aware of, and things like that. But I mean, we were just like talking about the user experience wireframe design part of it. But the other part of it is like documenting these actual requirements in the form of like stories suitable for you developers to like pick it up, mm-hmm. like, you know, like story cards, or, you know, defining these epics that we were talking about.
So going into the agile terminology.
Product development, again, has a connotation of continuity. So development is not going to end once this first piece of work is completed. So we have this product backlog.
Yeah.
Shruman may have identified what's going to go into the first drop of development, which, you know, might be 75% of the work. How do we then look at incorporating the remaining 25%? You know, so there's ongoing work that's associated with that as well, and continuing to develop the product, yeah, just as you would develop any product, right?
Yeah, that's right. So that's where the project managers like come into picture. So they have like complete visibility on what features are being currently implemented and what is in the current backlog. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, as a business analyst, I might be like working on the next set of backlog with the same product. So yeah, so it's like this particular backlog is kind of a life cycle list, and
yeah,
you developers keep taking it and implementing it, and we will keep adding more.
And QA keeps knocking it back, yeah, and then we have to do it again. And yeah, then the designers say, no, you didn't get the key line right.
Yeah. I
miss my key lines.
I think apps are no different to any product. They can't, you know, we talk about apps need to be maintained so they just remain active and not broken, right?
But yeah, once you release, it's not done.
Yeah, but yeah, they're also still, at the end of the day, a product. Forget the technology, and just like any product, they need...
What about a hammer?
believe it or not, they've found ways to innovate them again and again and again. I don't know how.
It's true.
I'm not a hammer.
I tried to stump you with that one, but you knocked it out of the park. Yeah.
How have they innovated on a hammer? I don't get
I'm not sure.
Mate, go to Bunnings.
Yeah, go see a specialist at Bunnings.
Hammer specialist.
You got hickory. You got stainless steel. You got injection molding. You got. I don't know what that is.
I want the experience now.
Wait, you know,
3D printed handles.
Next time you buy a hammer, you will have an app associated to it that can tell you how many calories you lost using the hammer.
Yeah. Or you could stick a tile on it, and then you know when you've lost your hammer, because always losing my hammer.
Or you could use it like in your home kit. You can throw it at a light and not turn it off.
I would love that. You could flip it and use it as a magic wand. Man, this is all gold. We're getting this down right.
We're
recording this.
This is gold. This is when the hammer industry changed for the better. I like it. So, all right. So, design's important. Development's really important because we're the ones that do the actual work. We're not. I just had to say that because development hasn't been mentioned much enough. okay, so we've got our MVP. It's gone out. So what do you do for an app? So a customer comes to you with an existing application and they say, you know, they want to add some more features to it. But mm-hmm. obviously it's not something that we developed, for example.
That's right.
What happens, like, kind of semi-briefly?
There's not only the scenario that they want to add some new features. They may not be happy with what they've currently got. They may want to be fixed.
So yeah. Is there a criteria that you can do?
What we usually do is burn it to the ground and then salt the earth. No, that is
and then give them a hammer.
Sorry.
This is what you wanted.
Carry on, carry on, stream, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there are multiple like angles to look at this. I mean, the first one would be from the UX part of it. This is the, we do a heuristic analysis. So what this means is trying to, yeah, it's
I'm trying to heuristic analysis. Yeah. I'm not going to let you get past that.
So these are like the set of standards, like the user experience standards that are defined for mobile application platforms. So what we basically do is evaluate the current app that the client has got. So like it could be platform specific or it could be in general the usability, like the intuitiveness or how tough it is to discover a particular feature, or if it is like a content rich, then is it really tough to read, readability and stuff like that. So basically like we have a set of parameters that we evaluate against, and if the evaluation shows that this particular app is to be rewritten, that's going to be our recommendation. And on the other side is the code analysis. I mean, for example, if we need to like take it forward and add, like say, as you mentioned, add few features to it, then it's more like trying to understand how good the code quality is, or maybe a code review. Like, I'm not sure what you developers like do for code review, but yeah.
We just go in a room and drink for an hour. If I've actually done a few code reviews for different bits and pieces, because I'm one of the few developers who've got way too much time spent in C#. So I get all the things come in that people have written in .NET. So we'll sit down and we'll actually run some tools on the code and see just kind of what the health is of the code, get the feel for it, try and see how much it needs to kind of, it's oftentimes code will be written just to make it work once and then they don't really think about maintaining it.
Yeah.
Sometimes code has been written very well. It's been designed really nicely and that's code that I like reading. So yeah, if they want lots and lots of new features and the code is just this big spaghetti monster, then
that's right.
That's burning it down to the ground.
How would you rate your code?
My code?
If someone was to review
your
work.
A good developer will always say that they read code that they wrote yesterday and they'll think it's rubbish because they've improved so much every day. But I have had many a
is
moment
that
where
not what you say then?
My code is gold. No. The code that I wrote yesterday is rubbish.
But I think it was
for whatever
question.
Reason.
I think it was a good question that you asked originally. What happens when someone comes to us for some advice on whether they should turn their big backlog into many apps or one big app, or if they already have many apps, should turn to one big app? And I think I know there's definitely a UX perspective. On what approach should be taken.
Can we just kind of squish all their apps into this one big thing that's no longer a minimal viable product? So you've got me saying it now.
Yeah. I'm minimal.
Just say MVP.
MVP.
So that nobody understands what it is.
we can shorten it now. We've defined it. Esports. Can they squish their app into one big one, or is that just a big mistake?
There is no like right or wrong answer to this particular question. I mean, from what I remember, this has been like $1 million question for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And all like even the big companies like seem to be like switching their strategies. And
They're pivoting.
That's right. Continuous improvement. I mean, if you want to like look at it from a UX perspective, the general principle would be to like have the apps do specific things because that's what users look at apps at. But again, it depends on what the organization's offerings are. And for example, like as Michael, you mentioned, like LinkedIn, for example, they do have a flagship app, but they also have like some other apps which are totally different. So in that case, there's no point in like trying to force all these functionality into a single app. Like for example, I think they have got Pulse, which is like a news, like a reading app.
Same as Facebook. I think they have
got about
four or five now.
Yeah.
And I think originally, I mean, a lot of the stuff that you can do in these separate apps, you can still do in the flagship giant app.
That's right.
But they've identified that the user demographics are different for who's using each one. So there's almost merit in making a standalone product. And I guess it goes back to just product fundamentals. What makes a good product? You know, is it someone using it as a standalone product? Do they need it all bundled in one?
As I said, like there is no like single answer, but the only thing I'm concerned about is like the user shouldn't be confused. For example, you mentioned Facebook, and I know they have launched this like standalone app for Facebook Messenger,
I think page management as well,
and photos,
And Slingshot.
So it shouldn't
photos.
Yeah. The only concern is like it shouldn't confuse the user. For example, if I want to like use Facebook Messenger, should I be downloading their flagship app or should I be downloading the like standalone one and things like that?
Yeah, that kind of irritates me. Yeah. But I guess any good mobile product is is really built around simplicity. And I think that's why we see all this fragmentation.
Yeah.
Because you look at stuff like Instagram and Snapchat and Twitter, the reason why those products are so successful is because people understand what it is straight away.
A simple thing with it.
Yeah, and it's like, if I get that thing, I'll be able to do this thing, and that will improve my life.
It does one thing, and
whereas
that's why I downloaded it.
Whereas if it's like, this is a mega app that does everything, it's a little bit harder.
Yeah. I actually switched podcasting apps because my original podcasting app did too much, and I was upset by it. Also, the design wasn't very up to scratch.
I think it's when you talk to enterprises who want to build apps, which is primarily the segment of the app market that we deal with, they also take quite a few other things into consideration in sort of defining whether they need, you know, one app or multiple apps. And I think marketing and the marketing of an app is a big part of it. You know, would it make sense for a company to have six websites? You know, maybe it would, but
it's very true. Yeah. You know,
so would a bank create six websites? No. Well, then why would they create six apps?
A lot of the banks have.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, I think ESPN has something like 70 apps on the App Store. 70 apps in the App Store.
Oh my gosh. But mind you, if your app did 70 different things, it would just be this gigantic amount.
That makes sense, though, because they're just making an app for each sport.
Well, that's right. It's sort of that halo effect. You know, we've spoken before about how hard it is to search for items in the App Store. You know, so if they have 70 apps, you know, there's a greater chance that someone's going to stumble across one of their apps. So
I can see your halo, halo, halo.
So that's almost their way of marketing, you know, their brand ESPN by having those apps. But if you're a big company who can throw a lot of advertising dollars behind specifically marketing one big app, then, you know, that can often make sense from a marketing perspective to just go that approach. Because I think we've spoken before that users generally have pretty shallow experiences with apps, and you either win them or lose them pretty quickly. So
yeah,
you have to make sure that you can afford to get it in front of their face.
Yeah, a phone has a very short attention span, a phone user, compared to someone who's logging onto a website at a computer.
Yeah.
Computer.
But Keith, maybe what about from a maintenance perspective? So if there was seven apps, so it's in the scenario when you're not an iOS developer, but let's presume for a second.
Pretend
you are.
I am.
So iOS 7 came out, it broke most of the apps on iOS 6.
We're about to go through where Android L is coming out.
Well, that's right.
And it's going to change the design of
everything. So if there were seven small apps as opposed to one big app, what would be harder to maintain in terms of effort to fix things?
To fix things? I suppose, in that case, it would be easier to fix the one big app, provided it was written in a way that was maintainable.
Yep.
But you find as projects start to get larger, it becomes much, much harder, almost exponentially harder, to make sure that project stays in as a maintainable state. So a project that did the same seven things as seven separate apps would basically be much harder to keep in a much more maintainable state as one than it would as seven separate.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. It's easier to maintain lots of small than one big,
sure,
from our perspective anyway.
Sure.
And also, Michael, like, it depends on, as I mentioned, the app that we're talking about. For example, based on our experience, like one of the sports app that we worked on last year, like we had a lot of these sections from like forced from the marketing or the branding perspective, whatever. And if you look at the analytics of the actual usage, you get to see like it's like less than 0.1% of users who are actually using those sections. So the marketing or the client departments, they might be like, okay, we have an app, I want my department's presence to be there or whatever. So we end up doing it, but is it of real value to the users is the big question.
Would it be useful to break those parts out and put them into their own apps, do you think?
Maybe? Yeah, I mean, if it makes sense for the particular product.
Yeah.
Like, for example, if it is a sports app and what are the users actually going to use the app for? It's like maybe checking the scores. It's not like you need a separate app to check scores and separate app to watch live or whatever. But if it is focusing on something primary, like fundamental, what the users expect, it's better to like focus on that and look at other things with caution, I would say.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we can put a wrap on that.
So in summary.
In summary.
Simplify, man.
Just release an MVP, man. That's all you need to do. Slap a logo on it. Cool. Yeah, I think we summarized it really quite well. I feel like I can come to you with an idea now about my awesome podcasting app. And
you will end up developing it.
And then I'll end up... That's just what I'm doing anyway. It's just not very well thought out because it's just me. Cool. All right. So on to the last item in our agenda today, something light to ease us out. We haven't talked too much about iOS and Android new things again, so let's bring it back in. iOS's Apple are bringing out HealthKit, and Android, I believe, are bringing out Android Fit, I think.
Keith, there's nothing light about health.
Fit.
There's nothing light about health.
Yeah, it's a serious talk. It's a serious business.
That's all we have.
I have health and phones. Lots of phones. So I just wanted a quick round the table about what you want to see from HealthKit / Android Fit, depending on which camp you like to play in. So
Shreeman.
Seek the knowledge of the Shreeman.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like trying to think from a features perspective.
He's
I mean,
so wise.
Integration is what like I would look at. For example, it's not just like having multiple apps each doing like standalone things. Like I go to a doctor, okay, let me open this app. Or I want to see how many calories I have burnt. Okay, let me open another app. I would like to have like an ecosystem of, you know, all this integrated stuff.
You want the one big app?
Yeah, it need not even be an app. So it's just like, you know, like...
You hypocrite.
You can just send me a summary of, okay, this is a list of your allergies because of which you need to focus on eating these items.
You want an aggregator that works with the things we already have. Exactly. If you have Nike Fitband or anything else like that.
That's right.
Then all the data goes into there. And
cool. The focus should be like simplifying the whole stuff and giving only what is needed to the user.
Oh, I just thought of something that would be amazing.
What did you think of?
You know when you go to any new medical place, whether it's like the osteo, GP, dentist, and you have to fill out that stupid form, it's always like a two-pager and they give you a clipboard.
Can you come in 15 minutes early so you can tell us everything you just told us over the phone again? Thanks.
That thing.
Yeah, I just moved here, so I'm doing a lot of that.
Just like a button you press and...
Yeah.
There's my stuff.
Talk to my phone. That would be really nice.
Why don't they know our identity? They're pretending
like they don't have it. It's like Google when it asks you what your name is or what your credit card number is. Like, oh, Google, you already know that information.
Yeah.
Silly. Okay, so is that your input?
No,
there,
I would like to see Apple's take on a pedometer app. So just like a native app telling me how many steps I've done. Because
especially when you're square dancing. It's very important at that time.
When I'm dancing to Hatman Joe.
I've just got this picture of you that she's a maniac.
No, because I've been looking for a good step counter app. I've tried Fitbit and they're like, hey, maybe you should just buy a Fitbit. I'm like, no.
I just try things. You did the demo.
And the app Breeze. And it's like, hey, good job. You just walked 20 meters. You're like, please go away, Breeze. And then it has this little thing where it's like, oh, you haven't set up push notifications properly. You should do that.
Like, yeah, so I could tell you've done a good job when you're at work.
I didn't. I disabled them for a reason. And it has this little indicator going, hey, you haven't done it. So I got rid of that. And there's another one where it has like those hexagon tile things. Can't remember what it's called.
Tile?
Tile?
No, it's not tile.
No, there's a rectangular.
It's Moose? No.
What is it? Argus. Yeah.
Hargus?
Argus.
Argus.
And that's like just over the top because it's, oh, how many like calories have you burned? Like enter in all this data. And
oh, wow.
You can delete stuff, but it's just confusing.
You can't trust hexagons.
So I just want Apple to, in all their Apple.
You want Apple's take.
Goodness. Yeah, to use that, what's the chip called? The M chip, motion chip, that's in the 5S, to use that data to its potential and really break it down and tell me that I need to walk more.
You just want an app that says, walk more, fatty.
You got to walk.
Cool.
So I would like that because I don't think there's a good solution out there.
Yeah, I look forward to Apple's take on it, actually. They tend to get these things fairly right.
Yeah, and they would know the hardware inside out. So,
oh yeah,
yeah,
they have to. That's their job.
It would make. I just want to see it. So that's what I want to see in HealthKit.
Excellent, Mr. Dalich.
To be honest, I'm not actually that excited at all about HealthKit.
Moving on.
Okay. So I think for myself, there's nothing that they've announced in HealthKit that would change anything in terms of what apps I use now for fitness. But as a hobbyist business analyst, I want to be a shroom, you can possibly say, I'm interested to see sort of how it takes off in the market, because Google actually tried this about 4 or 5 years ago. They released Google Health, which was essentially what both Apple and Android are trying to do now, which was a Google-hosted central sort of repository of all your health information, which you could take to any clinic or hospital around the US. And it sort of crashed and burned. It didn't take off at all. I know Google had a lot of difficulty with sort of privacy and a whole swagger of other issues. So I'm interested.
People have just been worn down now since then. Like, I've told Google so much stuff. I might as well tell them this.
Yeah,
too.
Maybe the barrier to the entry barrier was still a little bit too high, and the fact that they had to have a laptop and take a laptop with them to a hospital or something. Maybe that's been watered down by the fact that it's now mobile, and Apple's doing it now, so it's cool. The hip people jump on it. Maybe that's going to be the catalyst that makes it work. But I'm interested to see if this time around it does take off, because
I think it will.
I think it will. Yeah, mainly because like this time it's going to be packaged to the consumers and the users. Right. Whereas last time it could have been just like, hey, we're going to collect all your data and store it.
So I think it's going to be really interesting. In 10 years, if this does take off, there'll be studies about how Google Health failed the first time and how it worked the second time, and analyzing the two perspectives and why one failed. That's how I'm finding it interesting, as opposed to a feature. I'm sorry.
The thing that bugs me about the sort of health app industry now is you always have to do another thing to get some data. So, like, you have to wear a Fitbit, you have to put your phone under your pillow, whatever, to get, like, your sleeping patterns, or you have to wear your Fitbit to bed. And it's just, or you have to input, like, what food you ate, you have to count your calories.
You just want something that's
in
your
stomach. With that stuff?
Well, there's that cup that came out.
Oh, that cup.
That you tells you what you're drinking.
Tells you what you just poured into a cup.
I think it was Bandy. Yeah, a vessel. That's it. Cup. I think Bandy sent it around.
It just adds more complication to your life.
I just thought it was such a great idea, though.
But here's a cup that tells you what you're drinking. It's, oh, thanks.
But it can. Well, we wanted to know what we were talking about.
With your phone, maybe.
We're talking about can tell you if there's poison.
According to this cup, I'm a fat bastard. I just ate 3 milkshakes.
The cup's like, another milkshake? Yeah. Really? Yeah, that's what I want. My coffee cup to judge me again.
And the cup's like, oh, you just drink everything out of this cup. So beer, your wine.
It's so easy. It's 100.
Your morning.
We make fun of it now, but it'll just take off. And
what happens when you wash it? I mean, you're going to pour some water into it and wash it, right? So
you have drunk a lot of dishwashing liquid today.
You know, unlike your wedding anniversary with your wife, and you're like, oh, don't pour that wine into my wine glass.
Can you imagine the first person that gets proposed to with a ring at the bottom of the vessel? Just that's lovely. Cool. Well, what I want to see is gamification, because I'm really unmotivated to do anything health-wise unless something goes wrong with me or there's some sort of achievement animation.
Your life is no game.
Oh, my God. It is. It really is. I just play games in my head all day. Everything.
What type of gamification, though?
Achievements would be one of the obvious ones to say. Try and get 1,000 steps in the next hour or something along those lines.
Because I find like all the pedometer apps are doing that, and it doesn't work.
Work.
I know it might be slightly off topic, but there's a running app called Strava that does that exact same gamification, whereby it tracks whether it's the fastest 100 meters you've ever ran before or over the same stretch.
Anyone else. Race yourself.
Well, you race the whole community who uses Strava as well. So if you've ran the same circuit five other people have, you can be third on that list, and it gamifies it, and I look at it and go, that's really cool, but I don't get encouraged to run anymore.
Do you think someone's just going to cheat and just hop on a motorbike with it and go, I'm running, winning.
I like with the running gamification thing. I really like the 5k zombie run app. Have you heard about that?
So is it, I've got an idea what it might be,
it's
but I haven't heard of
like
it.
An audio game. And it sort of narrates that zombies are chasing you and stuff, so you have to run faster. And I think that idea is really cool. But
I'm actually going to go look for that.
The whole like, hey, you're only 50 steps from doing this. I just look at that and go, that's nice.
You've been eaten by zombies. Goodbye, like, I'm going to have another milkshake. Nom, nom, nom.
Just with gamification, like maybe we can extend it a bit more formally. I mean, since we're talking about health rather than fitness, like your doctor could set you a target and like achievement levels rather than with the friends. So maybe the number of calories or you know, like...
That would, yeah. I would hate that even more.
Okay.
But I think the interesting thing about HealthKit is, yeah, you couldn't really lie to your doctor. Or I heard there was a toothbrush that, like, tells where you've been brushing.
Where you've been brushing, yeah.
So you can't lie to your dentist anyway. Yeah. It's like,
yeah, same thing, when I go to my physio, and they're like, oh, you have to stretch 3 times a week to make sure you do this. Stretch something, and every time I go, I'm like, yeah, I did them. I don't know why my back is still sore.
Yeah. Obviously, yeah.
And then, yeah.
You know what? I don't want HealthKit or AndroFit anymore. It's like the parent that's telling you off now. Yeah. And I don't want any of this. I'm with Michael. Yeah. Cool. All right. So that's the end of our scheduled meeting for today. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you, Mr. Shreeman.
Yep. No
and reason. Thank you for letting me say I seek the knowledge of the Shreeman just once, because I say that to you at least 3 times a week when we're on the same project. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, always, until I put you back on the blacklist. Thank you, Mr. Peter.
Thank you, Keith. It's been an absolute pleasure palace.
Oh, that's beautiful. Mm. You say something beautiful every week now. Thank you, Mr. Bandy. Thumbs up. And thank you, Luce, as well. We have 6 people in the room now. It's doubled our listening audience. Luce isn't even listening. She is. Cool. Okay. Do we have any feedback things that we want to plug?
No.
We have
catch
Twitter.
Us at Outwear. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye.